Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose on Tuesday warned that the final results of the presidential contest in Ohio probably won't be known by the next day. And that's not a bad thing.
The numbers will change between election night and the final certification. That's not a sign of something nefarious happening. In fact, quite the contrary. It's the sign that the system is working the way it's supposed to.
We're talking about that system today, the voting process in Ohio, again, because it's important. Andy Chow is a reporter for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, and he covers all this stuff. Andy Chow, welcome back.
Good morning, Ann.
A record number of voters are expected to cast absentee ballots because of the pandemic, and we know that already because a record number already have requested them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a record number have been requesting ballots. Of course, this is in response to the coronavirus pandemic and people wanting to avoid having to go to the polls on election day. I think there are a lot of people who are all too familiar with all the issues that happen during the primary when all of a sudden the day before in-person voting was supposed to happen, it was delayed. Then people had to try to sort of switch things over and try to vote by absentee mail. And there's been a lot of messaging coming out of the Secretary of State's office warning people to, if they want to vote absentee, to just get that request in there right away. The office has sent more than 7 million absentee ballot request forms to people all around the state, to all registered voters. And so people have received those within the past week. And they're already turning that around and sending them back into their local boards of elections to get their absentee ballot.
I think it was during the Tuesday presser that the Secretary of State was sort of falling all over himself, trying to distinguish between what President Trump said about voting twice and calling that misinformation versus disinformation. What was he talking about?
Well, so the president has said, and this was during a conversation in North Carolina, so he was specifically talking about voters in that state, and it's been a misconception that's sort of spread throughout the country that, and again, this is not correct.
Do not do this.
He suggested that people should vote through an absentee ballot, but then also go to vote in person on election day. Do not do that. The Secretary of State in Ohio says do not do that. If you vote by absentee ballot, you can track your ballot online, I think through at least through the Franklin County Board of Elections. I'm not sure about every county. You can do it that way. He says do not test your local Board of Elections. They know what they're doing. So if you vote by absentee ballot, do it that way. And if you vote by absentee ballot, then you should not go in to vote in person.
Because that's actually illegal.
It's illegal.
Mm-hmm. It's called double voting, twice voting.
Yeah,
you can't do that. You can
only
vote
voter fraud.
Right. Yeah, that's considered voter fraud. But you can request a ballot and not use it, an absentee ballot and not use it. But when you go to vote at your polling place in person, if you choose to do that, then you have to vote a provisional ballot.
That's right. If you put in a request for an absentee ballot, then that's telling the local board of elections that you want to vote absentee using the mail-in ballot that you could either mail back or drop at the drop box. But then you are then on record for requesting an absentee ballot. So if you decide to not fill that out and go in person, you can do that, but you'll just vote provisionally, and then there will just be extra steps that are taken administratively to make sure that you haven't also sent in your absentee ballot.
Right. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and as promised, we have another voting information show to get everybody ready for the vote, however they choose to make it and whenever. In time for the November 3 general election. My guest right now is Andy Chow. He's with the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau and has been covering these issues. If you have a question or comment, we want to get your questions or comments in now. This is kind of the big kickoff post-Labor Day, so give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. Coming up, we're going to have Jen Miller, the executive director of the League of Women Voters Voters of Ohio, and also Aaron Ackerman. He's executive director of the Ohio Association of Elections Officials with us. The Secretary of State also has asked the state controlling board, which is a state legislative panel that approves expenditures over a certain amount, for permission to use funds slated for other uses. So these are Secretary of State funds, but they're slated for other uses, instead to use them on absentee ballot postage. What's the expectations that the state controlling board will do that in time?
So it is kind of coming down to the wire here. They're supposed to meet on September 14th, and so that's coming up here next week. And this is something that's been done in the past. There was a lawsuit and a legal battle that happened a little less than 10 years ago with Cuyahoga County, which led basically a compromise between the state and the Cuyahoga County executive there, to be able to send out absentee ballot requests to everybody with postage paid. And so that's sort of just continuing that model of equal protection, making sure that everybody, instead of allowing the local county boards of elections to provide absentee ballots with postage paid, it has to be done on a statewide effort. And so Secretary of State Frank LaRose is reaching out to the controlling board, which, like you said, they approve expenditures of this amount. He wants to be able to put $3 million from his own office's budget into paying for first-class postage for anybody who requests an absentee ballot.
What are the expectations that the State Controlling Board will approve this?
It's sort of on the edge right now. It's hard to sort of get a sense of where they are at this point. We do know that the Senate President, Larry Obhoff, a Republican from Medina, has concerns about it, has maybe some legal questions about it. Frank LaRose has pushed back, saying that any sort of legal questions is just misguided or just, you know, not correct. And he's really arguing that the controlling board does have the ability to do this and looks back at previous cases of being able to allow for postage paid in the past.
The Secretary of State is accused in lawsuits that he's fallen short of his duties by not increasing the number of absentee ballot boxes in Ohio's 88 counties. He said that he can't do that. Why not? And could that change?
So the argument here from LaRose is that he doesn't believe that he has the authority to do that without permission from the legislature. Of course, there are Democrats in the House and in the Senate who push back and say, no, the Secretary of State does have the legal authority to allow local boards of elections to pop up more than just one drop box. At this point, every local board of elections is required to have one drop box that's on the premises of the Board of Elections, and it's under surveillance, so it's supposed to be, you know, kept under watch. The fear here from the Secretary of State is that if he does move forward and allows for more drop boxes in local county, in the counties, then it could make the office vulnerable to a lawsuit. That's kind of the argument for a lot of the reasons why he's not going forward with things and saying that he needs permission from the legislature, is the argument that he doesn't want to be the target of a lawsuit so close to the actual election day.
Well, he is the target of a lawsuit.
Yep. He's already the target of a lawsuit for not allowing for more ballot boxes. And one of the big arguments here is that, especially for counties that are so large, you could be driving a very long way just to be able to drop off your ballot if you want to use the drop box at your local board of elections. And then the other thing here is, and this is important for people who are voting by absentee ballot, that your absentee ballot must have a postmark of November 2nd. So election day is November 3rd. The absentee ballot must be postmarked by no later than November 2nd. And then at that point, You know, you might not want to just drop it in your mailbox on November 2nd, the day before Election Day, but actually take it to the post office, or, and this is why voter advocates are talking about this, just take it straight to that drop box.
And so let's think about this. I don't know how many registered voters are in, do you know how many registered voters are in Ohio, or about how many?
I think it's about more than 7 million, 7.8 million, I think.
Okay. So, and we're talking about 88 drop boxes for, let's even just say, half of those people vote through a drop box. That's and by the way, those drop boxes are obviously, they're not floating drop boxes. They're just one place. So depending on where you're located in relationship to that drop box, it could be a challenge or not.
Yeah. And there are voters will have 28 days to be able to deliver those ballots in person. But, you know, we know that that's not really a reasonable expectation for somebody to drop it off 28 days before election. It's bound to be kind of a last minute thing for a lot of people. I know I've been one of those people who just kind of waits to the last minute to be able to drop off an absentee ballot and or even request it. And so it is expected that there might be a high volume of people trying to drop it off closer to Election Day.
One thing I don't think we've talked about much about is that there's not going to be very many issues on the ballot this year, right?
Yeah, as far as I know, there aren't any statewide issues, and that was actually a consequence of the pandemic, is that right. It made it harder for people to collect signatures because, of course, they would go to festivals and large gatherings, and signature gatherers weren't able to really push their issues or initiatives ahead.
So that changes things as far as people waiting. Lots of times, at least that's one of the reasons why I always like to wait to the end, because I want to get all the information that I can about the issues, and there aren't that many this time around. So that may simplify things for a lot of people. The county boards of elections are still working to attract thousands of needed poll workers. The last count I saw was that there's about 33,000 already signed up. This is still a big problem. Have they done anything to sweeten the pot?
Yeah, so the Secretary of State's office has said that this is a big priority for the office to try to recruit more poll workers. You need 35,000 poll workers around the state at minimum to be able to carry out the election. And then LaRose says that you need about 50% more of that. So you're talking about around 5,000. Or I'm sorry, you know, I can't do the quick math there, but you need well beyond 35,000 to really make sure that you have enough reserves for Election Day to be able to operate functionally a full Election Day. The Secretary of State has said that there are several programs that have been implemented to try to attract more people to be poll workers. There's the I think it's called the Youth at the Booth program to get 17-year-olds to be able to come in and work as a poll worker, and then in return they can get some sort of community service credit for that. There are programs trying to encourage veterans to continue serving their country in different ways by being a poll worker. And then there's a professional licensure aspect to all of this, where lawyers are allowed to, they can get continuing education credits if they work as a poll worker. There are accountants that can also get continuing education credits or some sort of licensure credits to work as a poll worker. So there are different ways that local election officials and the Secretary of State's office is taking to try to attract more poll workers.
There's a lot to talk about, but Andy Chow, I appreciate your time today. Thanks so much. I hope to talk to you about this again soon.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
It's Andy Chow. He's Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau reporter. Coming up, we're going to get to your questions. They all look good, callers, so stand by. And if you want to email us, you can at allsides@wosu.org. We're taking your questions about the voting process today. The number is 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Mike Thompson.
And I'm Steve Brown, and we are the hosts of Snollygoster, WOSU's podcast all about politics in Ohio.
Each week, we chat about what the shrewd politicians at the State House are up to and how national politics affects us here at home.
Find out why listeners have called us a weekly must-listen. For a lighthearted yet in-depth look at Ohio politics, subscribe to Snollygoster wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Secretary of State Frank LaRose on Tuesday said that the November 3 election will be secure and accessible.
Ohioans have three really good choices. As far as how they vote this November, there are three really good choices. 4 weeks of early voting, 4 weeks of absentee voting, and safe and secure in-person election day voting. All three choices work well. Ohioans simply should pick the one that works best for them.
We're talking about the voting process again because it's important. Jen Miller is the executive director of the Ohio League of Women Voters. Welcome back.
Thanks, Ann.
And Erin Ackerman is the executive director of the Ohio Association of Election Officials. Welcome back.
Good morning, Ann. Thanks for having me.
It seems like the last couple of times we've talked, we just run out of time. We never run out of questions. So we're just going to keep at it until the bitter end. So I really appreciate your time. We have callers waiting, and we're asking people to give us a call if you have a question about the voting process, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Erin, we heard from Secretary of State Frank LaRose on Tuesday that the results might not be known right away, and that's not surprising given the circumstances, but the Secretary of State emphasized that getting absentee ballots in early could help mitigate that. How so? Because these are counted as soon as they come in?
That's correct. And so I'll start off by saying that this is nothing new. We always have outstanding ballots that come in after Election Day. Now, typically, those are provisional ballots that we hold and we count about 10 days after the election. So actually, every 4 years, we kind of have this conversation with voters to help them manage their expectations. But this one in particular, because we're expecting so many absentee ballots, and you have until 10 days after the election, you know, to get your ballot to us. You have to mail it by November 2nd, but we have until 10 days after the election to receive it. So potentially, if people wait until the last minute, like Andy was talking about a minute ago, and mail it in, you know, we won't be able to receive that and count that until after Election Day. So that's why there's kind of a concern this time.
And then we also heard that he's saying, Jen Miller, you know, that it's going to be fine, that everybody has a fair option, that there's the three different ways to vote and that there shouldn't be any problems. At this point, you agree?
So yes and no. So mostly. So first off, we do have three great options in Ohio for voting, and every voter should make their election plan. They should look at those three options, decide which one is best for them, and then not delay in making sure that they understand the system and are participating in the system. So, you know, for those who want to vote in person, we strongly suggest you vote early and not wait till Election Day. For those who maybe they're immunocompromised or have someone in their life who's immunocompromised, perhaps they do want to vote absentee. And again, they should not wait. With that said, there are always ways to improve access and operations. And our job at the League is not just to think of the average voter who maybe has a car and can easily get off work and can easily afford stamps and lives pretty close to the early vote center or to the drop box. My job is to really think about every Ohio voter, and there certainly are more challenges for some voters than others, which is why we continue to push for other reforms like multiple drop boxes. We'll see if that happens. Why we support Secretary LaRose's request before the legislature, the controlling board next week for prepaid postage. And so, you know, it is, we have a great system. People should understand that their votes are going to count. and that we have, it's a trustworthy system. With that said, some folks just do have more challenges accessing their right to vote.
Okay, I want to get to some questions right away. And Ken in Upper Arlington, you're first. Hi, Ken, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. Enjoying this show. I have a particularly sticky problem. My wife and I applied online to vote absentee about 6 weeks ago. And about 2 weeks ago, we get a letter from the Secretary of State saying, here is your form to apply for your form for your absentee ballot. So I've got acknowledgement that they received and accepted my application digitally over the internet. But now I have this application, which suggests to me they don't have. So if I send the second one in, filled out, it will look like I'm double voting. And I will be made my vote will be killed, is my theory. Help me understand the truth of that. Thank you.
So let's see. Aaron,
yeah, this is easy, Ann.
Okay,
this
go
is
ahead.
Easy, Ann. So I'll just jump in. So Ken, thank you for that call. A lot of people think that they are applying for their absentee ballot online, that they're actually putting in an application online. You are not. So when people think that, you didn't actually get an application in online. Ohio doesn't allow that, unfortunately, even though both Aaron's group and mine and the Secretary of State would all like online absentee requests to be made possible by the legislature.
So what was he doing?
So here's what happened is you asked for an application.
Right.
And so that application is something that would have come in the mail to you. But also the Secretary of State sent out applications, which is great, to every person on the voter file. So you need to fill that application and send it in. If for some reason someone accidentally does apply twice, you're still only going to get one ballot, and that ballot's going to count. But there's a lot. I mean, I've heard this over and over again during the primary, too. People, very educated people who thought they applied for their ballot online when, in fact, we don't have that, that you can fill out the form and then you still need to print that out and send it in.
Okay, so you can ask for absentee ballot application online. And you might get that, but no matter what, everybody but got an application for an absentee ballot in the mail automatically, right?
Correct.
So that's why some people might be getting two absentee ballot applications, because they requested one and because one was automatically sent. And as long as you send in one of them and request your ballot, you're safe.
Yep, unless you get a note saying that you did something wrong on your application, and you might need to reapply.
Yeah. Okay.
Correct.
And if I could just 1 second, because this is an important topic and it's pretty hot right now. Not only are people getting the request from the Secretary of State, but there are also third party organizations out there like the League of Women Voters and others who are encouraging people to vote by absentee. So they're sending out requests for applications on their own. The political parties are doing that. There are lots of groups out there that are encouraging people to vote absentee. So it is not in the slightest bit unusual that a voter may receive more than one of these applications. And as Jen mentioned, as long as you get one of them to us and you can track that and you can make sure that it was received by the Board of Elections, then you're fine. But people shouldn't be worried about getting more than one. That's very typical to happen in a presidential year.
Okay. All right, Ken. So glad you're voting. And hang in there. You're doing fine. Everybody else, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have a woman, Susan, emailed us and says that I live in very southern Delaware County. Can I request to be a poll worker close to my home? Aaron Ackerman?
You can only be a poll worker in the county in which you reside under state law. So in southern Delaware County, that's a very populous area. There are plenty of polling locations around there. But she would apply to the Delaware County Board of Elections to be a poll worker, not the Franklin County Board of Elections.
Right. And can she say, I want to, do they try to put them near their own home?
As a general rule, we do try to keep people as close to home as possible. There are times where because of the, and we can talk about this, I think you might want to talk about this a little bit later, but because of the partisan balance that's required, you know, we may need to send someone a little further away to achieve that partisan balance at the polling location. But as a general rule, we try to keep people close to their home.
Okay. And Jane in Sunbury, you want to know, why don't you tell us your question, and maybe we've already answered it.
All right. My question is, I took a copy of a request for an absentee ballot online, printed it out, and sent it in to request for an absentee ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then I didn't think anything more about it, but I was wondering, did it get there? So I called the Board of Elections, and they said, yes, we have your request for an absentee ballot. Then, and about a week after that, I got the provision, the regular absentee ballot from the Board of Elections, and it has an identification number on it, so that they can track that identification number to me. I don't know whether to fill the second one out with the identification number on it and mail that request in, and it would supersede the other one, because the other one was just a printout online.
Okay. Aaron Ackerman?
Jane, you have done everything perfectly, and it would be great if you did not send that second request.
It doesn't matter.
You're already in the system.
Yep. Okay.
Yep. And we're able to track you. Once you get the application in, that's a really nice feature that the secretary included in his mailing, but we certainly have you in our system as confirmed by your Board of Elections. And the good news is, when you get your ballot and you mail it back, you're also able to track the movement of your ballot through the postal system to make sure that the Board of Elections received it. So, Jane, you did everything perfectly.
Is that in every county, Aaron?
It is in every county.
You're able to track it. Jen Miller, anything to add?
No, that's great. But again, I think that's the point is, you know, the other thing Jane did right was she didn't just sit and worry. She called her Board of Elections. And so just make sure if you have a question, call in to Ann Fisher, but also call the league, call your Board of Elections to help.
Okay. Jane, thanks for your participation in this this process. I'm trying to get everybody. Let's see. Susan in Upper Arlington. Susan, you're on the air. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Ann. I've worked every election as a poll worker since the last presidential election because my identical twin sister Robin and I said someday we'd work as poll workers, and Robin passed away, so she didn't have that someday. I've done it for her. I can address a couple things. First of all, I worked at the Norris Center. I was assigned to the Norris Center when I lived with my parents, since they both passed after my sister passed away. Since they both died, I requested to be put, so I'm talking to what the Delaware County woman asked, to be put closer to where I live, to my condo, and it's worked out very well. Now, I'm an independent, and as the gentleman said, you have to have a balance between Republican and Democratic working the polls, so they can stick me anywhere. But I did request to be closer to Mom and Dad's initially, and then to be closer to home. Mm-hmm. By the way, I want to tell you that the youth at the booth are wonderful. I wish they'd had that when I was in high school, because they do a hell of a job, a really good job. And the other thing is, I wanted to touch on, I know this is not your topic right now, but I have been through this training a bunch of times. I have worked on slow elections and fast elections and everything, and I know that there's not going to be any way that there's going to be any election fraud, because it's impossible. The way they have everything organized is just impossible. The other thing is, because I am considered a senior, they're going to have personal protection equipment for the poll workers. They've really stressed this. But I'm going to take some extra masks, and also I think I'm going to take some plastic gloves, because you touch a lot of things. And, you know, so I'm going to just take my own PPE to have it in case I need, in addition to what they supply. But I am very comfortable that I'm going to work it. I think it's my civic duty. And I'm this election, I think I'm looking forward to being busy rather than bored. So.
Okay, Susan, thanks for your help. We appreciate your service. Anything to add to that, Aaron or Jen?
No, that's a wonderful story. Thank you so much. Really appreciate your service and your conviction to support democracy.
All right. Beth and Hilliard, you're on the air. Hi, Beth.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for having me on.
Okay.
This might seem like a silly question, but I was wondering why the state of Ohio, once they receive the absentee ballots in the mail, they don't start counting them right away, just keeping the results under wraps until after the election, the polls have closed. Why do they have to wait until after the polls have closed? Because then we wouldn't have to wait so long and there wouldn't be so many questions about fraud or inaccurate voting tallies.
Jen Miller, do you know?
So first off, they do start counting those absentee ballots and those, you know, once they come in. So you're right that the tallies are starting. They're just not made public. And the main reason for that is because there's this thought that if people know how the tallies are going before Election Day, that that would change potentially people's behaviors. So this idea that Election Day used to only be one day, and part of extending that for 28 days of early voting and for having no excuse absentee is really that in law, boards of elections can start counting but not making that public. About the fraud issue, I don't know if that really – so I just wanted to reiterate Susan's point earlier, is that we have a really, really secure system in Ohio, and so we should not be worried about fraud. All three methods are really safe. And so I don't know if that's a good reason to change our system at hand.
Okay. Aaron?
Yeah, Jen pretty much nailed it. I just want to make one distinction, kind of semantics, but it's important. So we actually we process absentee ballots ahead of time, meaning we can, you know, check all of the identifying information. We can open the ballot and open the envelope and remove the ballot, flatten out the envelope or the ballot, which, believe it or not, actually is a very time consuming process when you're talking about millions of ballots, so that it'll feed accurately through the scanner. And we do scan it. But as Beth mentioned, we process that ballot, but we hold it until election night for all the reasons that Jen mentioned.
Okay. Beth, thanks for that call. Noreen in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Noreen.
Hi. Thanks for having this great show.
You're welcome.
I wondered, when voting early, is that considered an absentee or a provisional ballot?
That's a great question.
Yeah, Jen?
Sorry, it's and Aaron, you can take it too, but it's technically an absentee ballot. So it's not provisional unless you go in and you don't have the right ID or the address you now live at is not the address that's on file, then you actually would get a provisional ballot during your early voting experience. But otherwise, it's just considered part of the absentee process.
All right. Anything to add, Aaron?
Nope. That's exactly right.
Noreen, thanks for that question. Let me ask you guys, when's the deadline to register? Not to be confused
October
with
5th.
October 5th. Okay.
Yep. October 5th, and we'll be open late that night. So if you want to show up in person, we're actually open until 9 o'clock p.m. on October 5th.
And when you say we, you mean all the county boards of elections? Or?
Yeah. All 88 county boards of elections around the state will be open until 9 p.m. on October 5th to get those last-minute registrations.
Right. Registrations, not to be confused with applications for ballots. Registrations makes you eligible to vote in the first place. We have more questions and comments, so just stay with us, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about all the ways to vote this November. Still with us, Jen Miller, Director of the League of Women Voters of Ohio, and Aaron Ackerman, Executive Director of the Ohio Association of Election Officials. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This may be a political question, but I'll ask it anyways. It's an email from Mike. Asked where the governor stands on the postage on the ballot issue. Jen Miller, do you know?
I don't.
Okay. And Aaron, I won't ask you. And Ashley asked in an email, she said she requested her absentee ballot a month ago and still has yet to receive it. How long would it generally take to receive my ballot in the mail? Aaron Ackerman, is this a case where she should pick up the phone and call her Board of Elections?
No, we're getting this question a lot at our boards. And just to be clear, we can take applications for a long time leading up to the election. We're prohibited by state law from actually mailing the ballot itself until October 6th. So Ashley should start checking the mail on October 6th and expect to get that ballot very soon thereafter.
Gotcha. I wasn't even paying attention to what I was saying there. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, the ballots won't be available until October 6th is when they go out.
Correct.
Right. Let's see. Chris and Galena, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Hey, I got my application for my absentee ballot, filled it out, mailed it in, and yesterday in the mail, it came back to me because when I folded it, my address was in the window.
Oh, okay.
So so if I go to turn it back in, can I just send it back in a regular envelope, or what do I have to do?
Yeah. Aaron?
And maybe they should design it so that a wrong address won't fit in the window.
Right, right.
Just saying.
Well, I know. I hear you.
She can stick it in a regular envelope and get it to us. Just double check on your website to make sure you have the right address for the Board of Elections, but it doesn't have to be in the window.
Yeah, when I sent mine in last spring, it was in a regular envelope, Chris, because that was, you know, because of the pandemic. Thanks for that call. Sorry. Ray in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Ray.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I've had several discussions with the Board of Elections about their website, and it mainly pertains to the drop boxes. They've recently changed their website, making the information more difficult to find, and they quote Ohio Revised Code 3509.05, which says that, and in dark letters or in bold letters, it says the elector may personally deliver to the director the ballot. That's not true. However, actually, the revised codes are referring to states and lists the number of relatives which can deliver your ballot to the box for you. Their website's a little bit deceiving.
So what's your question, Ray?
The question is, I just wonder if anybody is aware of that, and how do we get that changed? I mean,
is this your county board of election that you're talking about?
No.
Secretary of State's website.
Yeah. Okay. And it conflicts with the revised code, and I'd like to know how I get that changed. I've spoken to the Board of Elections, and they did rewrite the website, but I think that's an important issue. For the elderly folks who don't want to drive, in my case, 20 miles to the Board of Elections. Mm-hmm. And it needs to be corrected, and I don't know how we go about that because I've complained to them several times.
Okay. Jen Miller?
So I think actually this is a really important point. So one of the things that happens is that election law is kind of confusing for the average bear. And sometimes, in my opinion, both the Secretary of State or local boards of elections websites don't really make sense to the general population. And so I do first applaud this individual for kind of trying to clarify what the questions, you know, what he's reading or how it's coming across. It may not be, I don't know that particular spot. It may not be completely incorrect, but still so confusing. And so I think we need to keep working to make those things clear. Now, the big question that he's talking about is who can drop off an absentee ballot. And he's saying that the way it's written, it feels like only the voter, him or herself, can drop that ballot off, when in fact, immediate family members can drop your ballot off. So, you know, and if you have elderly parents, you could mm-hmm. drop that off for your elderly parents. You know, siblings, and so on.
Mm-hmm. Anything to add, Aaron Ackerman?
No, I think Jen emphasized the key point there, which is who's able to drop off your ballot.
Okay. All right. Ray, thanks a lot for that call. We appreciate it. Turning now to Phyllis in Dublin. You're on the air. Hi, Phyllis.
Yes, I'm concerned because I was told that there would be great care taken in handing out absentee ballots. And a friend of mine just went up to the Board of Elections in Delaware, Ohio, and wasn't asked for any kind of ID or anything.
But she wasn't getting an absentee ballot, right, Aaron Ackerman? She was getting an application for an absentee ballot.
Correct. It's a confusing but important distinction. If anyone can absolutely request an absentee ballot, and we will hand you that form, we will email it to you, we'll mail it to you through the post office. That form itself will contain identifying information. So your friend received the form, but she's going to have to fill that out and include identifying information, which we will then verify back at the Board of Elections. Assuming that comes back clean, we will mail your friend a ballot. And then that ballot will also have an envelope affiliated with it, which will require additional identifying information. So there's a couple checkpoints in the process where we're verifying identifying information. As you stated, Anne, you can just, anyone can get the application itself.
Right. Does that make sense?
No,
Phyllis?
No. She filled out the application in the office.
And the
but right. So, Phyllis. So
hello.
Okay. Phyllis. Yeah. Listen, Phyllis.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hi,
Jen Miller.
Hi. I hear your concern, and I respect your concern, and we care a lot about security, and so does the Board of Elections. So here's what's happening: she can fill the application out in the office, but if it doesn't have the right information, she will not get the ballot. So what happens is we fill out an application. Then the Board of Elections confirms that that person is a registered voter, that their information is correct, that they provide on that application. If it's not correct, she will not get a ballot. She will only get a ballot sent to her in the mail, and those start October 6th. If everything on that form is correct and they deem that she is that person, an eligible voter, then once she gets her ballot, she will have to once again prove who she is through that identifying information. And if they don't think she is who she is, the ballot won't count. So actually, absentee voting is the only time in Ohio where a voter has to prove who they are twice, once to get the ballot, and once for the ballot to count. Just filling out the form doesn't guarantee that she would get a ballot. So if let's say someone pretended to be her and they didn't have the right social security number, they didn't have the right birth date, the ballot would not come.
And here's the thing. Here's the clincher. There are no ballots available right now. There won't be until October 6th. So she couldn't have gotten a ballot. It was an application for a ballot, and it wasn't automatically approved, is what Jen's saying. They have to review the details. Phyllis, I hope that helps. This isn't our last show on voting, everybody, so fear not. We will get back to all of these issues again and again if we have to clarify things. Phyllis, thanks for that call. Emily emailed us. She said she went to LaRosa's site. She said there is scant detail about the jobs, i.e. no shift details, pay, etc. I called his office, was referred to Franklin County Board of Elections, called yesterday, still waiting to hear about the details of the job. Aaron Ackerman, where do people go to find out how to be a poll worker and the kind of details they need to know?
That's a wonderful question. And if you would get me Emily's email, I'll follow up with Franklin County Board of Elections to make sure we reach out to her very soon. Because the duties actually vary slightly county by county, because we have different voting equipment in each county. We have different poll books in each county. The pay scale is slightly different in each county, and the training sessions obviously are very different in each county. Your best resource is going to be your local Board of Elections. So she did the right thing by reaching out through the Secretary of State and then reaching out to her local Board of Elections. But we will make sure that we get in touch with her ASAP.
Okay. All right. I've set that one aside. I'll get that to you. Michelle in Gahanna, working on it. Michelle, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, good morning. I'm filling out my absentee ballot application, and I'm afraid that my signature may not match the one on file. See, I've developed a habit over the last few years or so of shortening my complete signature to just my initials. It's just faster and easier at restaurants, grocery stores, gas stations, you know.
Okay. So, Jen Miller, can you respond to that, or Aaron?
I'm going to let Aaron take it first.
Okay. Aaron.
Yeah, I would encourage Michelle to include a little note in her when she sends that in, talking about the fact that her signature has changed, and if she wanted to follow up with the Board of Elections once they receive it to reiterate that. Signature changes obviously occur naturally with people, and so we do our best to accommodate those. But I know this is near and dear to Jen's heart, so I'll let her talk a little bit as well.
Yeah, Jen.
So we certainly encourage people, you know, and maybe if someone has carpal tunnel or they fell on their bike and their signature looks different, vision impaired. You know, I have one example of a member who had to apply 3 times because she's vision impaired and got denied for a signature match. So please be proactive in that. And the note, I think, makes a lot of sense. But just also know that this is a subject of litigation right now between the league and the state of Ohio, because we do know that signatures change over time. And we don't think we have, and we think our approach is pretty subjective as a state. So there may be changes between now and the election in terms of how that works.
Okay. And then Brian has an interesting question. Brian, you're on the air. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Good. What happens if I vote absentee and between the time I voted and November 3rd, my candidate kicks a bucket?
Is it just too bad, Jen Miller?
I'm going to give it to Aaron.
Okay.
It's a great question.
My understanding is that once a vote is in, it counts for that candidate. You know, that we have different, you know, there are different laws that apply if the candidate kicks the bucket before the filing or before ballots go out and things like that. But once they're on and ballots are live, my understanding is that that vote actually counts.
Okay. That's that. That's what I always worry about too. That's why. let's see.
Your point earlier, Anne, about waiting until.
Well, I mean, you know, or you change your mind, or you learn some new information, or whatever. That's always been my motivation for doing that. We're running out of time, so I'm just going to go to our emails now. Thank you, callers. We will be having another voting show, information show. I know this is important. We're going to keep doing it until we get rid of all the questions, or we answer all the questions, I should say. Marianne asks, can you mail your completed ballot by certified mail receipt requested? Jen Miller?
Go ahead, Aaron. I would say yes, but go ahead, Aaron.
Yep.
I think you can, but I wouldn't encourage you to spend that money, because you can track it and you can just call your Board of Elections to confirm receipt. So it's up to the voter in that instance.
Okay. And is there Lisa writes, is there a need for people to assist in driving people to vote in person, either during early voting or on November 3rd? Aaron Ackerman, is there a way to help out, or Jen Miller?
I'm actually going to defer to
Jen.
So we've
had a rise.
Okay.
Yeah, we've had rise to the polls in the past, and we've decided not to do it because of COVID-19, unfortunately. But
okay.
I would encourage her to check with the parties. The parties may still be doing that.
Okay. The Democratic and the Republican parties. Let's see. John is asking, the deadline for mail-in voting is 10 days after the election, but that's a deadline. It has to be received on by November 2nd, right?
That's correct, Ann. So the ballot has to be postmarked by November 2nd, which is
okay.
The Monday before, and then received no later than November 13th.
Okay. Well, I guess that's... A recent letter to the editor, another one from Marianne, says that absentee ballot envelopes are marked R or D. Is that true for elections, or just primaries, or not true at all? Jen Miller, real quick.
That's a good Aaron question.
Okay, Aaron Ackerman.
The application may request a party affiliation for the primary. I don't believe it does so for the general election. Obviously, we have to, you know, when you vote
right.
in a primary, you declare a party so that we get you the correct ballot. So that is requested information for a primary, but not for a general.
That's Aaron Ackerman. He's executive director of the Ohio Association of Election Officials, and also Jen Miller, the executive director of the League of Women Voters of Ohio. Thanks to you both. We're going to have you back again because there are lots of questions out there, and I want to get to as many as we can before Election Day. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.